All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the March 15, 2016 Village of Alloway Board Meeting. If you could all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I will officially call the March 15th meeting to order. I'll take a roll call. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
President Gast is here. Trustee Dart is excused. Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
All right. Is there a motion either modify or adopt the agenda as presented? Trustee Green, is there a second?
Well, move to modify.
Oh.
Is there a way we can move number 9 up? I know we have members of the public here for that one.
There is every way we can do that, should we wish. All right, the motion's been made to move item number 9. We'll put it at 4A. Any other proposed modifications to the agenda? Trustee Rafter, do you second the modification of the agenda?
I do.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The modified agenda is adopted. Announcements. Madam Clerk.
The presidential preference in spring election will be held on April 5th. Absentee ballots are available to be mailed to you at this time. They are available in person for voting March 21st through April 1st. The second announcement is due to the election on April 5th. The board decided to schedule their next meeting on March 29th to replace that date.
All right, thank you. Any staff announcements?
I've been approached by the Bob Charnesky on our warrant list has piled up to about 208 entries. He asked about possibly putting posting warrants on the Alloway Public Safety Facebook page. We haven't done this in quite some time, but it has been done before. We're just kind of looking for any concerns from the board here as far as posting these. I have a little bit of a criteria here on what actual warrants would go on. I mean, it'd probably be over about $200. And, you know, felonies and stuff like that. It just wouldn't be for a no seatbelt or anything like that. DePere has had success. They do a warrant of the week, they call it. Suamico has been doing it. I know our Sheriff's Department reposts a lot of the warrants that the City of Green Bay posts. There's a little disclaimer on the bottom on these postings and everything else. Just kind of looking for any concerns from the board here on me possibly going through with that at all.
All right, does anyone at the board have any concerns? Trustee Harris?
I think as long as we're following the criteria that other municipalities have used successfully, then we'd be okay. That'd be the only thing I want to make sure we're doing.
Any other concerns of the board?
No.
Just one.
Yep.
I would even suggest to these people have obviously been given multiple notices and they're ignoring it, but just one more notice that all names are going to be posted on the village website on this particular date and see if you can't get some of them cleared up before that.
Absolutely. I've been making attempts today and everything else. I know Green Bay has a little disclaimer. We do not want you to approach these people, but if you know where their whereabouts, please call Green Bay Police Department or DePere or, Brown County Sheriff's Department. Absolutely.
Any other issues or concerns? This wasn't listed as an action item on the agenda, so I will, since the board has no concerns, I'll just make it so through executive order. So make it so. All right. Any other staff announcements?
If you have not driven down Webster, the old labor-ready building has been raised. Quick Trip's been there. Last Friday, I think they pulled in. So.
When do they plan to have it? The new structure, though.
middle of July.
Well, if I remember when we approved it, we got free donuts for a month. Wasn't that part of it? All right, any other staff announcements? Hearing none, any board announcements? I have one. This will be my last meeting on the Village Board. It's been a privilege and an honor to have served the Village and its residents for 10 years now. 9 years as a trustee and the last year as the president. I didn't run for re-election. This has been my great privilege and honor. And it's also been my privilege and honor to have served with such a wonderful board. I'm getting as bad as Steve. I'm starting to tear up just a wee bit. You're very thoughtful and you're very deliberative. And this board and all the people that I've served with on the board who are no longer here have always had the best interests of the residents at heart. You know, there's been no politics on this board, none whatsoever. The question always is it the right decision to make? And this board gets it right many, many more times than it gets it wrong. So it's been my privilege. And the village is also blessed to have such a wonderful and dedicated staff attending to all of the inner workings of this village and providing efficient and cost-effective and courteous service to the residents. I think the thing I've heard the most about our wonderful village is that we have the best services around, and that's all due to the staff. That's due to the board in issuing policy and making decisions, but we truly have a dedicated staff. I mean, every single person here is committed to the residents, committed to the village. I think and I hope that I will leave the village a better place than I found it. I think that's the case. And working together as a board and with staff and with the citizens, we made Alloway a better place to live, you know, a better place to work, a better place to open and run a business and raise families. So I think we've done a pretty good job. But I think Alloway's brightest days lie ahead. And even though I'll be on the sidelines, I'll kind of keep an eye on you folks. And I have great optimism for the village. And I think that I'm leaving the village in very capable and good hands. So I just want to say thank you to everyone for the trust that the residents have imposed upon me in the last 10 years. Once again, it's been my privilege and my honor. End of my announcement. All right, with that said, public appearances, anybody can address the board on any issue that they so choose. We can only take action on issues listed as action items upon the agenda. My great privilege to welcome Mr. Matuzik for the last time.
Well, I'd be down here when I found it was your last meeting. I have a fair statement, but before that, regarding, I didn't get a chance to finish reading about the cadets, and I think overall that's a good program, except I hope they don't again have them running around issuing citations for having brush out too soon, which I think happened a couple, 3 years ago. Anyway. Florence Matuzik, 2680 South Webster Avenue. I'm going to read this so I don't forget any of it, okay?
You're permitted, sir.
As a self-appointed sage of Alloway, I again am going to quote Joe Namath and guarantee that you will like most of what I have to say. And first of all, Randy, thank you for the service to the village. As the meeting's presider, you are in a tie for first place as far as I'm concerned throughout the 48 years I've been here. Ironically, the other one was also Miss Rennie. So I guess the guys aren't all bad. With all due respect to Jim Rafter, who I'm supporting for village president, I would have liked to see this board remain intact for a little longer. However, I'll address that shortly. If Mr. Rafter wins, then you will be short one board member, and these are my suggestions. Since a special election doesn't make much sense because of the cost, my first choice would be the board to try and persuade Randy to fill out the remainder of Mr. Rafter's term. And I'd work on lobbying him as well. My second choice would be to take a chance on no tie votes and function with a six-person board until April 2017. I think that could be accomplished because they seem to get along pretty well. And I don't think there's been anything close to a tie vote very often, but that's the second option. My third choice, which you might not like, But here's my third choice, would be appoint me to complete the term, with the caveat that I would not run for election 2017. I can't think of any other citizen who could hit the ground running better than I, considering my knowledge and interest in the village. If you were to appoint someone who intends to run, you would in effect be anointing someone by giving them the incumbent advantage, and I'm uncomfortable with that. Let them work for it. Hopefully, we'll select my first recommendation. As you know, I like the way this board has been operating. You still have some rough edges and need some guidance, but I think you're doing a good job, and you might be, like I said once before last fall, you might be the best one I've seen in nearly 48 years, so that's good. So I hate to see you go.
Thank you, sir.
And finally, for now, you know what I think is the smartest move this board has done? Appointing that guy right there as administrator.
I'll second that.
And then right now, in my opinion, he is the second best administrator I'll ever have. And in a couple of years, I expect that he is going to be the first. With a little more seasoning. Thank you for listening once again.
Thank you, Clarence.
Any question?
Nope. All right, anyone else wish to address the board? Sir. If you could just please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Alex Galt, and I live at 1426 South Jackson Street. And I'm appearing before you today because I felt it was appropriate to introduce myself. I'm running for Brown County Superintendent in District 15, which is just north of what Bob's running for. And one of the reasons I'm running is because I hope to work closely with the Village of Alloway to represent its interests in county government, and because I feel that that's something that maybe hasn't happened to the extent that it should have been happening. I'm also, generally I'm concerned with issues of infrastructure, and I feel there are a lot of ways that the county can be run better, and so I hope to bring better governance to that board. I don't have a whole lot more to say. I just really wanted to say hello to you and to let you know who I am and what my intentions are.
Well, we appreciate you introducing yourself to the board, and should you win, I'm sure this board will look forward to working closely with you to make the entire county a better place.
Well, that's my hope. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to address the board?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I think Alloway is a wonderful place. We have wonderful committees, and I think that the board has been remiss in overlooking the value of the committees and making unilateral decisions that hurt the village. While doing committee work for the village, I became aware that on January 6th of 2016, that the village obligated themselves to approving an illegal subdivision of the town and country site. Specifically, a parcel was cut off from that site and not included in the sale of the property to Mayflower. And that particular parcel does not have legal access to a road or any pedestrian access. I was particularly concerned about pedestrian access to public places and the pedestrian refuge island that was going on being put in front of the Mayflower greenhouse. And so our committee paid an awful lot of attention to that particular site. Well, that is an illegal subdivision. It'll be coming up a little bit later on today, and the village is trying to rework that subdivision so it does come into compliance with the law, but I think it's a day late and a dollar short. The village has been unable to provide provide a legal description of the property to the buyer, and they haven't done the survey, and thus the closing for that particular property has come and gone. So they were supposed to close in February, and that has now been delayed to 2 months. Finally, I believe that the village is using and has been using the land district development process to circumvent the zoning code. I'm aware of it four times. This is the fourth time they've done it. And so I would like the village to take a close look at whether they're actually allowed to use the plan district development to circumvent the zoning code to put single-use projects in a specific location. What most concerned me about the current Mayflower Greenhouse project is that for some reason that is now being tried to be established as a greenhouse-only area in violation of the commercial zoning code that we have. That place, the greenhouse may be viable for 10, 15, 20 years, but I think it's a bad idea to start spot zoning specific uses in our through the PDD process instead of using our commercial zoning code. So I would like the village board to review that entire process. I would suggest scrapping the contract that they have with Mayflower, coming up with a better plan, and making sure that all pedestrians have access to that site. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to address the board during the public appearance section of the agenda? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on with the new business section. Strike that. We modified the agenda. Next one will be action regarding sale of real estate, southeast corner of AL 125-7, Lot 1. Village Administrator Lang, want to introduce this subject?
This is the parcel that Mr. Orange just alluded to. He sent us to take that. There's a finger on the Mayflower property, or it's village property, it's not Mayflower property, and square that off within the neighbor. So the intent would to offer that property, once it's legally recorded, surveyed, offer that for sale to one of the adjoining property owners.
Just so that everyone's clear, that's village-owned property?
It is village-owned property.
And it's property that's not subject to the sale to Mayflower? And all we're waiting for is the legal description and the survey work to be completed, right?
We are. I'll comment just because of the comments Mr. Rourke made about creating a new legal subdivision. And I mean, he's correct at this point, but we haven't done anything to actually form a new property interest. And we were aware with. We took off a triangle off the back of what's called Lot 1. And that was after talking to Mike Diener and the assessor, who determined that property didn't add any commercial value to the property that we were attempting to sell to get development along Riverside Drive. It also was clear that that triangle probably made more sense with the condition of it than being an easement on it, being attached to a neighbor's property, and that actually creates a squared off lot for us, and it makes a logical looking lot for the abutting property owner that Brad talked about. So you could authorize us to proceed based on the per square foot price that we acquired from Brown County as a sales price if they're interested in purchasing it from us. In the event that there wasn't that interest, then that property would have to be brought back into any potential future sale, whether it be to Mayflower or whoever, because correctly, we just can't create a landlocked parcel like that. That was never our intent to do so.
Well, it's only 3,752 square feet, so we're not talking about a huge lot. All right, do we have a motion from the board concerning further the process of developing the survey and the legal for the potential sale of this property to an adjoining property owner? Trustee Green.
I'd make the motion to offer it to the adjoining residential property owners that lot would square off. In the event the adjoining property owners do not want it, that then it go to the next sale to what's being termed now the Mayflower lot, the Alloway lot that we currently own.
All right. Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Harris. Any discussion concerning the motion? Trustee Harris.
One thing that we would not be deciding tonight is a sell price for that particular parcel, correct? Just want to make sure that that.
Yeah, it's just to get it ready for the eventual sale, and then I have to come back to the board for a determination of price, and then we can go ahead and offer it to the adjoining property owner. Trustee Rafter.
Is there anything illegal about doing that, Dennis?
The long answer is no.
Okay. Okay. So it's okay for us to hold on to it until we decide what to do with it.
So we started paying Dennis by the word. So, so no.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other discussion? Hearing?
Just one, because I feel most comfortable including this on there. And a little bit of it is because of the relationship to the amount of emails that I've seen and the conversations that I've seen regarding an illegal subdivision, okay? According to the dictionary, a subdivision is a portion of land divided into lots for real estate development. We're talking about 3,200 square feet. This is not a parcel of property that's being divided for lots, for sale, in a real estate condition. This is a small piece of property that we're just looking to square off. So the reference of an illegal subdivision is uncomfortable.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimously passed. Item number six, number five. Action regarding creating section 11.04K of the zoning general provisions to establish exterior lighting levels and schedule a public hearing. Mr. Roberts had a memorandum on this subject in the board packet. Maybe you can introduce this topic, Mark.
This came about, had a few complaints over the years, but I've had two complaints about lighting, people putting up security lighting. Putting up security lighting and aiming the lights over in the neighbor's yards. The new LED lights that are coming out now, they're brighter than the old, you know, fluorescent lighting, so that's, if people aren't really used to adjusting their lights. The old logo, when I went to a house about 3 weeks ago, where a lady was shining light directly into the backyard of her neighbor, and actually both neighbors sided in that. We talked to her about it, and actually we had nothing in writing in the ordinance that said that you can't do that. You know, a good neighbor, she wouldn't want to do it. She wasn't doing it to be facetious. It was just that she couldn't understand it. Why can't she shine her light that far into his backyard? So that's why I brought this up. I've got two complaints last week, one on Hastings and one on Coolidge, where, again, new security lighting is coming up and people actually went shining across the street into the guy's living room. So that's why I brought this up. Hopefully get this in passed, and that way I have something to work on since the deputies will go help me leave the chest of lighting. As far as check-in, I do have a light meter with LEDSU. This is actually taking the LEDSU ordinance that I know how to use, which I've had to use over there a couple times to check the lighting meter, illuminations, and neighborhoods, make sure there's no light trace.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. I'm assuming that this ordinance is patterned upon, you know, some different municipality, and particularly the foot candle maximum spillage.
Right. This is actually what I took from Ledgeview.
And that works fairly well in Ledgeview.
Yes, it does.
All right. We can't pass the ordinance tonight. I think the appropriate motion would be to recommend that it be taken up at a public hearing and put on a future board agenda as an action item for formal adoption. So I'll make that motion. Is there a second? Trustee Harris, any discussion? Trustee Rafter.
I have a question. Is there a way to change the language or enhance the language so that an everyday, ordinary human could understand it?
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, when you take a look at the definition of foot candle and its square foot, if we have a property line, how much am I allowed to shine on the property, on the neighbor's property?
that would be followed by the light trespass. If you look at the next page, yep, there it gives you the residential high-density districts and the professional office districts. As far
right.
As
so that's point.
It says 0.20.
Yep.
That's where you have to have a light meter. You have to go over there and shine a light meter.
Right.
What I did, the legend, what happened was, explained to Lynn, is the, one of the neighbors took his lights and he was shining on his own house, but his house was yellow and the light was reflecting off the house and his yard. So I had to go over to the property line, stand on a light meter, and you know, it, above, it went way above point 20. So that I could show the guy this, you know, the board says you can't have this once you cross the property line. I mean, you get real technical with it, and you don't just generally say, show it person, say, this is what meter's showing, you've got too much light, you need your light, you either drop it down or move it to where it's not shining so much light over. I mean, you can't, you know, the complaints are basically what we get is people to shine them directly into somebody else's house or right on their property where they're having their patio or something.
Right.
They're doing. That's most of the complaints we get.
But if we have an ordinance describing what's allowed and what's not, I think we should try to make it so that people can actually understand it.
Right. We can show them that.
I mean, when I ran through this, I did some very simple math and said a foot candle is 1 square foot. So 0.2 of a foot is 2.4 inches. So can I not have light 2.4 inches on my neighbor's lot line, over my neighbor's lot line? And I'm just saying,
it's not as much distance as it is power and light. It's not as much, you know.
So I just, we should probably,
well, I think,
try to make that clear.
Well, I think, regrettably, there's probably no way to make it any clearer. I mean, there has to be a standard, and none of us know what the heck it means. But I assume that, you know, we'll exercise some caution in enforcing it. And I mean, I think the goal is to have an ordinance, you know, with a certain foot candle requirement, and then I trust that, you know, Mark or whoever's enforcing it would say, look, you know, go to the property line with the light meter and say, this violates the ordinance, fix the problem. I mean, that we wouldn't go out and, I mean, if you don't listen to us when we tell you that, then that's a different issue. But I would assume we'd at least warn people, because I don't know what it means either.
Yeah, it would be nice to tell them ahead of time, that's all. So okay. In our newsletter is something saying, don't shine things in your neighbor's yard. Or we'll have a light meter in your front yard.
The other thing is that we could also give a value on what kind of bulbs we're using. I mean, that's what people are going to do. They're going to go to whatever store they go to, and they're going to buy whatever bulbs they buy, and they're not going to worry about anything else. They're going to walk up, and they're going to say, oh, that's 60 watts. I'm going to buy that. Or it's a floodlight, and it's got 120 watts or whatever. And we should be able to put it as understandable language in our ordinance as opposed to this. Now, I understand what you were saying about the reflective value and the albedo rate of reflection on a yellow pole. I get it. But the common person is not going to be able to sit there and figure that out. I mean, if we give them guidelines in regards to what the power of the lamp is, or what we look at as a power range, it doesn't have to be in the ordinance, but it can be a sheet that we hand out saying, okay, here's what we found, that a bulb that is X value is too powerful. So people have an idea, because they're not going to be able to look at that and figure it out as well.
Okay. Again, but you understand one thing about this is most of the problems we get is people directing lights at people.
It's not, I understand, so much that. However, the better the clarity of our communication of our ordinances and or our restrictions, the easier it will be for people to comply. So if we give them an addendum to that saying what the value of the bulbs are, there is a greater chance that there will be lesser infringement on other properties.
Yeah, maybe we just, you know, put some kind of a cheat sheet addendum, you know, we can, you know, put in all about Alloway or put on the website for a period of time after adoption. Any further discussion? Trustee Green.
Actually, yeah, you know, in hearing all of this, we have a lot of houses that are shared driveways and fairly close together, and if they put lights on their garage, there's no way to just, I don't think about enforcement of this. And people just not knowing and inadvertently going over because things are so tight. So how do we help them with that?
Again, it would be the same thing. It would be how much light's trespassing over the neighbor's yard. How bright is this light going to be? Is, you know, how wide it is? You know, you got your foot candles. You know, you got 1,000, you know, foot candle garage light, like a street light, which some people put on their garages, of course, that's going to be too bright. That would you, actually, I almost have to explain to them how much light they should put out before they start going to somebody else's property. I mean, it's not exact science. I mean, it's almost like you have to look at it. Like I explained to you, that one guy, he had a street light in the church down the street, and he had used it in his parking lot, but it was illuminating the neighbors. And that's why I went over an idea that it was way over 0.2 candle power in the neighbor's yard. And which he did, he lowered the light, moved it, so it got out of their yards. And for that, I have not had a complaint on something like that other than that one. Mm-hmm. As far as a guy in the garage or anything else, the only thing I've been getting is a security light. That's those two lights. Usually people buy them through an anal. So far, other than that, that was 5 years ago when I first started. I got that one down there. But the rest of the one getting lately is just the security lighting, like deadbolt and I went to.
And the people who already have these up, I take it, are grandfathered in because we can't retroactive in zoning ordinance.
They can be grandfathered in, but they could also, if they change light bulbs, you could say, now you got to go to a certain light. I mean, if they're, you know, they couldn't make a brighter light.
Right, if they change it out.
Right.
I'm worried about going through it. If we're not having any issue with some of these and they're there, and they're already there, how do we tell them? Yeah, that seems unfair to me, so.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be grandfathered if they can change the light and come into compliance.
Can you change the lights in those, though?
I buy cheap 40-watt bulbs. They know.
Well, no, I mean, the LEDs, I don't think you can change them out. I think once
I want the old cheap light bulbs.
Well, so do I.
The expensive ones. Did you look at anybody else other than Ledger?
No, because actually, I wrote the one for Ledger. I used Green Bay's, Pierce, some other towns. And generally, everything's always 0.20 for the foot candle.
Let me do this. Let me make a substitute motion that we defer discussion of this issue to the meeting in April. And maybe in the interim, Mark, if you could pull together some of those other light ordinances and let the board look at them, maybe we can pick and choose some things that might satisfy some of the concerns in terms of explanation and example. And I mean, the Ledgeview one's fine, but there might be a few, you know, good pieces in some of the other ordinances that we could incorporate or blend into ours. Is there a second to the substitute motion?
The second had a comment.
To March 29th or to April?
To the first meeting in April, which would be the
16th 19th.
Trustee Harris.
Just a suggestion on how we may be able to augment the information to make it simpler for people, maybe two or three instances of, if you have a light bulb 500 lumens, 750 lumens, its distance where it would be crossing over would be 50 feet, 70 feet. That might be something that's a little more understandable. It's not going to be precise. I understand how that will work, definitely, if you're looking at reflection. But someone who's buying a light bulb, whether it's 40 watt, 60 watt, or with the LEDs that are measured in the lumens, they may be able to understand it, again, as a guide, number of lumens, number of feet. Just a suggestion for explaining that.
Mr. President, we also may theoretically find ourselves in violation of our own ordinance if we were to go down and measure the number of lumens on the Hoffman and Leibel intersection, the roundabout. If you go through there at night, there's enough light down there to play a ball game.
It's daylight.
It's daylight. It's bright. I mean, it shines on the houses. So that might be something we need to address as well.
I would assume that, and maybe I'm wrong, that the light intensity by the roundabout could be a DOT requirement. We can check into that. If we're going to pass an ordinance, we got to comply with it too. But I'm guessing that there's probably a DOT requirement in terms of the intensity of street lights in certain areas. But something we can take a look at in the intervening time between now and the meeting in April when we'll bring it back for further discussion. Any further discussion on the substitute motion to postpone until the April 19th meeting?
Just Matthew, a second.
Yes. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
The postponement motion is granted unanimously. Item number six, actually, our new iron equipment, fiber optics, and to go out for bids. Mr. Lang, you want to talk about that a little bit? You have a very good memo, but for the benefit of the public who may not have seen the memorandum.
Several years ago, Brown County installed fiber optics in front of the village hall, and at the time it was offered to us to connect with, but we weren't prepared to do so. But when the village hall itself was constructed, that technology was put internally within the village hall itself, so the conduit and the internal fiber has been run. What it is this particular proposal in our budget in the CIP is to take it from just outside of the village hall on Lytle Street, bring it up to just outside the window here, and then into the village hall. What the fiber optics will allow us to do is have direct contact with Brown County and Green Bay. So any shared services down the road that could be looked at, Brown County mapping or planning department, everything would be much quicker. It also ties into being on the fiber optics, fiber network for NUI would make it a much quicker for our residents as well, because we're able to transmit quicker to down in Brown County. Couple issues. We anticipated the cost to install the fiber optics to the village hall at $14,500. That was okay until WISCnet came along. That would be the internet provider is called WISCnet. A router would be needed to be purchased, and that's $2,200, which we didn't anticipate. And then the fees for WISCnet is a little bit higher than what we're currently paying. So those are two of the problems. And the third problem is the line that we were hoping to utilize, and they're still going to work to see if to verify whether or not this is still true, has been taken by City of DePere. DePere ended up connecting with Green Bay to do their water utility bills. So they have a direct line, and so now there could be a line short, and we may have to run a line from, what did they call it, the manhole out here to Grignon Street. And then it would be spliced into Green Bay's at that point. So that is an additional cost that, again, we didn't anticipate, which is $4,300. So just the fiber optics alone, the overall increase was roughly $7,000 that we didn't anticipate, and quite frankly, we had some pretty good pricing with Chris has been on the parking lot, even a lot less than what was anticipated, so there is some room in the CFP if we want to continue moving in this direction.
The fiber optic component, we're not talking about putting that out for bid, or are we?
That would be put out for bid, correct. Working with Multimedia Communications and Engineering, They take the responsibility of, because it's very technical, and I don't want to get involved in trying to learn too much of the fiber optics and how it's all spliced, and they maintain it for Brown County, so they would help administer that whole aspect. So again, that's just over $14,000, unless we have to add that extra line, which would be $4,300.
So are we talking about working with Multimedia and then
yes,
putting out the installation to bid?
Correct.
Multimedia doesn't do the bid? Or doesn't do the installation?
They'll put together, they'll administer it.
The contract?
Yes.
Okay. So you're looking for the board to authorize approval to proceed to bid for the fiber optics.
Absolutely.
All right.
We may as well talk about this, is because it does fall into the fiber optics as well, is the potential equipment needed for NUI. Chris and I met with a contractor, as well as Brian plan from Troy's office to talk about what is it that we would need in order to live stream our board meetings or committee meetings, whatever the board so chooses they would like to see live fed. Two cameras would have to be mounted in this boardroom. One would be facing out this way that would pick up someone at the podium, and it would also pick up staff, and one on this side that's picking up the board. So there's quite a bit of wiring, internal wiring that needs to take place, and it all ties into the fiber. The other aspect would be to change out our current projector that would become wireless, so that you could be using it from your podium, we could be using it from here, and that's a means to cut down on the amount of paper that we tend to produce, and then we would be able to show this memo up on the screen, and the public could see what we're talking about. And we're not producing these large documents all the time. we can save more paperless. So that falls into the mix. And then the other aspect would be to add a 70-inch screen that would be on wheels for the back, because it gets a little bit difficult to see the screen up here. It just provides an opportunity for the back. That screen can also be used to put out in the hallway for running the new eye stuff for people that are coming in. We can do all kinds of announcements on it. It would be more versatile. So I don't know if I've missed anything. The approximate cost, this was not budgeted, so this is the other discussion that we must have. One, either including that in with what you anticipated paying for, or how you were going to pay for the new eye program, which was potentially using the stadium tax refund. So, in a sense, it's a budget reduction because you're not a budget reduction. It's just you're not budgeting for that particular method. But it's about $38,000 for all this equipment and installation. So if the board so chooses, they would like to move forward with the new eye aspect, with these cameras, with the screen, with the projector, a total package should be put together in one resolution authorizing the expenditures of those funds part of Department of Revenue. So we want to firm those numbers up a little bit more and then bring a resolution. If the board so chooses, they would like to investigate this through the budget process, we could certainly do so. We just wouldn't be able to do the live streaming of any board meetings once New Eye is up and running, hopefully this April to May-ish to June, is it July? Sometime this summer? Could be April, as early as April. What we would have to do is, use iPhones or and then we would have to save the data and send it over to Brown County.
Are you contemplating or seeking board approval to put the new eye component out to bid as well?
Well, the new eye aspect is certainly what we'll do is we've got numbers from a vendor. We can seek additional comparables.
But technically, that aspect would not have to go out to formal bid, right?
Not necessarily, no.
We can get comparables and multiple quotes and just pick the one that seems the best.
It doesn't meet that threshold of a public work. But we would certainly want to have some comparables to bring back and make the final decision on.
We don't necessarily need two cameras, right?
Well, if you have one camera, which one do you want it to be on? And then you would have someone up speaking, and then you would just have it back in their head. And you would never have staff. And it would also kind of show a little bit of the gallery. It is an option. You could go to one camera.
Yeah, I was just thinking if you did it over there, could you get a side view? But
What there will be with these cameras is one will be live. Like at this particular time, Chris would have or myself, or someone sitting at the table would have the opportunity to change the camera.
That would make you the director.
Otherwise, so that camera up there would be facing us now. That would be live just when we would go on standby, and then as soon as the discussion goes back to the board, it just, so it gives that interaction so people know what's going on, who's speaking, who they're speaking about.
If we went with the 70-inch monitor, do we even need that?
Yes.
Why?
Because we don't need that to project over here.
Right, but can't we use a 70-inch screen to do everything?
This is bigger than the 70-inch. The 70-inch will be over here so that anyone sitting back in that corner when we show something on the screen, it gets distorted,
right.
And they could be right over there looking at it. So in a sense, you're having two.
Bless you.
At one point, or one time, we talked about another drop-down screen in here, but that doesn't make sense. The 70-inch would make it more versatile. It could be used in the other boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it could be utilized out front. Talking about what is the, as we put together our PSAs for UI, we could be running them internally so people actually see them here. And one of them would be, Debbie and I were talking today, and I'm not going to put her on the spot, but it's the confusion of what do I need and how do I go? What is it that I need? You know, you could have a segment right on there.
Oh, you could have a show.
Coffee with Debbie.
Coffee with the clerk.
Trustee Harris.
excuse me. I have a handful of questions, concerns. Starting with the cable, fiber optic cable that we're no longer able to use, wasn't that part of the selling point for getting us involved with this, is that it would be available?
The one cable is to connect to Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
The other one would still take us to Brown County. So I sent another email out to verify whether or not we truly need that, and I have not heard back from Green Bay.
And then do we have, I wonder if there's a way for us to investigate or ask the city of De Pere, how many people are watching their telecasts? I don't know if it's 200 people or if it's two people, and balance a little bit of the accessibility where we're currently recording all of the board meetings and they're available for review with an audio feed. Does the extra cost, is there a cost worth the benefit for that amount of viewership when you're getting the same information just visually instead of just audio? Then the other item I've got is I understand how things can get missed, and you know, as I originally read through the note, we've got a little bit of cost creep going on, which I don't like, but it can happen. If we're looking at $38,000 compared to the original plan of $16,000 and change for the entire year, we've more than doubled the commitment. I know it gives us more benefits for the entire village and the meetings that we have, but I'm leaning more towards that being something we look at the budgetary stage.
And it's certainly an option to put that off to budget to see if it fits in the budget. We can't commit to it today saying that, you know, we're going to budget for it for 2017 because you can't commit to that at this point. It would certainly be a discussion or discussed item during the budget process.
The $38,000, that's above the $16,000.
That's above the $16,000. $16,000 is the commitment of the 10% of the franchise fee that was agreed upon at this point. And the method that the board so chose to look at would be utilizing the stadium refund.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, that portion, the $38,000, doesn't have to be put out to bid, and you can get estimates and comparables that the board can look at and pick and choose at a later meeting, right?
Yes.
Right. We're not making any commitments now.
Right.
Mr. President, there's two things that to address there. One of them is that the actual audience numbers that be validated or drawn on are minimal. The second thing is there will be an additional cost to that above and beyond what we've mentioned now, and that is that if you're going to switch back and forth on cameras, you have to have a video switcher in order to do that. It's going to be at least another $2,000.
That's included in here.
The video switcher is?
Yep.
The next new, the first new I board meeting will be on the 17th at the Brown County building from 1 to 2:30 p.m. It'll be the first time that we've actually had a chance to all sit down and just kind of work through things. So.
Well, and maybe through some of those discussions we can get a little more information to map out a path going forward with equipment and those types of things. I think it'd be a great idea, you know, whether we need all of the bells and whistles, but I think it'd be a great idea to, you know, stream the meetings and get what we do out to the community. And I like the idea of, you know, putting something back there so residents can actually, you know, see things a little bit better. What I'll do is I'll make a motion that we put the fiber optic connection work out to bid with the understanding that that'll come out of the pre-approved budget authorization plus the CIP fund to ultimately pay for the accepted bid. As to the new equipment, I'd charge staff to pull together some comparable estimates with all of the bells and whistles, and it can come back to the board to review those and go through the list and figure out what we need and what we don't need. So I guess that's the motion. Trustee Rafter?
I'll second.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, get the estimates with all the bells and whistles, and the board can call through it and figure out what we need and what we don't need, and maybe we'll have a few discussions, you know, with the new I board of directors, you know, before any decisions are made. Does that give you what you need?
I think so. I know. Chris has been saying it because there's
not easy to understand.
It's not easy to understand. And I start talking, and you know, you're making these split boards, and really, yeah. So we've been working with the with Brown County with the multimedia, so that'll give us the opportunity.
Or maybe through some of these discussions, I mean, maybe we could cooperate with, you know, some of the new IP people and make the purchases and then share, you know, some that's not going to work so well.
We're pretty much the only one that's not set up. Ashwaubenon has the infrastructure they need. Howard has the infrastructure they need. We don't have it.
So, everybody understand the motion? Any further
we
discussion?
We understand that you just want to keep an eye on us after you're gone. That's why.
Well, yeah, I'm going to be just glued right on that. I'm canceling Netflix, you know, to watch that. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Next item is item number 7. We'll take them separately. Item 7A is the purchase of a wheel loader. There was a memo in the packet, which I'm trying to find.
Yep.
No, it's right on the back side.
Oh,
yes.
There it is. All right, so the purchase of the wheel loader was included in the 2016 Public Works budget. Looks like we're going to be able to get it below the budgeted amount, and it'll come out of the equipment replacement fund. Is there a motion from the board to approve the purchase of the wheel loader, the Volvo? Trustee Harris?
Move to approve.
There a second? Trustee Green?
Second.
Any discussion? Trustee Harris?
I did check with Craig the anti-rust coating. That's going to add about another $2,000 to the cost, $1,500 to $2,000.
Which also adds a fair amount of life expectancy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because they do a nice job doing that, and that keeps those vehicles up and running a little longer than they would otherwise without it.
No, it allows us to extend the life.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Brad.
I was going to say, Jim Sigalski is here if there are any questions. Sitting in the back, and so is Scott.
Do you guys like the wheel loader?
Absolutely. No?
I'll say something.
Easy. Trustee Rafter.
I was talking to Craig about this as well, asking him, do we need to do it now? And on the Public Works Committee, we know that there's a plan in place to replace equipment. This thing's been in operation for 10 years?
It's a 2004.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So so a little over 10 years. And the last one that I believe this replaced, or the last time we replaced one, the trans went on the old one, and it cost like $23,000 to fix, and this one's starting to have a few issues, and they know it's going to be getting into it. So we run these things hard, and I think it makes sense.
Well, and, you know, since this one isn't, you know, run into the dirt yet, the one we're trading in, I mean, we at least get a trade-in value on it. So if we run into the dirt, we don't get a trade-in value on it. So sounds like the right time. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We now have a wheel loader. The second item from Public Works is the purchase of the equipment for the leaf collection truck. Once again, this was a 2016 Public Works budgeted item. It's a vacuum leaf collection blower skid. If I remember correctly, it came in under the budget, mm-hmm. once again, so that's a good thing. And I think our village is second to none on snow removal and I think in the leaf pickup. I think we do a fabulous job on that. And that's something that, you know, the residents really, you know, strongly desire and like about the village. Trustee Harris.
I just wanted to acknowledge and thank, as part of the proposal, staff will be assembling the unit. So we're mm-hmm. saving X amount of $1,000 by doing that work. So it is appreciated. Every little bit helps.
That it does. And it helped that we didn't have a ton of snow this year because the overtime budget wasn't hitting. We'll pass that motion later. No more snow in Allen. All right, do we have a motion in a second?
No.
All right, is there a motion to approve the purchase of the vacuum leaf collection blower skid? Trustee Green. There a second? Trustee Dennis. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The equipment is authorized. Item number 8, action regarding parks and recreation facility and field rental fee changes. There was a spreadsheet presented by Chris and his staff. Chris, you want to maybe just a brief overview for the benefit of the public?
The Park and Rec Department had looked at our fees for facility rentals and our sport fields and other things that we rent out to the public and sport groups, and those fees hadn't been changed in many years, 4 or 5 years, and in looking at them also we found that the way many of the rentals were categorized, it was confusing to not only staff but also a lot of the renters. So we tried to adjust the categories and simplify things to make it easier on staff and the renters, as well as slight adjustments to the fee schedules for many of those. We did find that many of the fees were in line with other communities, so it's not like we're way above or way below what other communities are charging for their services and their facilities. A few of the other adjustments that we're looking to do with this is changing our Green Isle Pavilion rental hours as opposed to a 4-hour plus rental windows. We're looking to either have half-day rentals or full-day rentals. That will make it easier for staffing for our watchmen that work those. It'll make it easier for rental purposes by allowing people to either rent a morning or an afternoon and not maybe rent in the middle of the day, which kind of blows the whole day for multiple rentals. So we're looking to do that. We're also looking to change the closing time for the pavilion rental at Green Isle from 11 p.m., which it is currently, to 10 p.m., and that'll put it in line with what our ordinances say for closing. We are looking to provide a weekend rental opportunity here at Village Hall, and typically those would be for meeting purposes and that. Charge for reservations of current and future park facilities like our open-air shelters and gazebos. Charge a special event fee to cover administration and utility or supplies for such events as like run walks that utilize Green Isle Park, because they're also utilizing our restroom facilities, which you know, may cost us as a village for cleaning and janitorial supplies. Looking to increase our sport field tournament fees. A lot of times we get requests for potential out-of-town tournaments, or out-of-town people wanting to hold tournaments or other types of tournaments, which typically make quite a bit of money, and so we're looking to recoup some of that for the time and effort that we put in here at the village, as well as increase some of the sport fees for the non-residents and the for-profits. And we did take a look, and utilizing the 2015 numbers and plugged them into some of these increases, we're looking at a potential 10-11% revenue increase that we're anticipating for 2017.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Nice job. I mean, it's always a good idea to review things periodically to make sure we remain in line or fix it if we're out of line. And a lot of work went into the spreadsheet to explain the current system versus the proposed structure and rental charges. Anybody have any questions of Chris? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion. Oh, you do? Trustee Harris.
Quick question. I don't know if it would be something we could do after the fact. I was just looking at the fees and the way they're laid out in terms of simplifying it. We've got different security deposits based on different buildings. Maybe we just came up with the same security deposit. It'd be cleaner for understanding. It's as simple as that. I don't want to get into the details because you've done a great job with it, Chris. I just thought that might help with simplification.
Our security deposits for Green Isle Pavilion currently, or what we're proposing, is a $250 refundable security deposit. The rest of our facilities that we rent out, the security deposit's $100. Our reasoning behind the larger increase for Green Isle Pavilion is the type of events that take place there and the potential for more damage or non-compliance for cleaning up, which then staff has to clean up and get it presentable for the next rental. But if the board so chooses to, you know, want to make that one standard across the board, I don't see it as being a big issue.
I mean, I don't have a problem with the 250 level, because it's a different kind of structure. I think that probably, I mean, you get the community center and people play cards. You know, you've got dances and weddings and stuff all at the pavilion, and just probably a bigger risk of damage to property. Trustee Rapp.
Speaking of weddings, how many of our weddings go till 11 o'clock at night, or our functions go till 11 o'clock at night now?
Many of them. Okay. Many of them, and in the last year, we've had a few that we've had to have police show up and escort them out because they weren't gone by 11 o'clock.
Okay. So, would we lose business if we moved that to 10 o'clock?
I don't believe so. Don't believe that by stopping and making sure that they're out by 10 o'clock would that 1 hour, I don't believe, would make a difference, and it's more in line with what the other community's hours are as well.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion. Brad.
Just so you know that anyone that does rent the facilities, their security deposit. Sorry, Clarence. Anyone that does rent any of the facilities in where a security deposit is required, that security deposit is cash. We have to cash them. We can't hang on to the check, and then when their rental's all over with, and we turn it over to them. So there is a delay when they do get their refund back. And it could be a week. It could be a little bit longer than that. And then just to give you a little more history, at one time, when I first started here, Green Isle used to go till midnight. And like Chris was alluding to, where at 11 o'clock the officers are showing up, we were having the officers there and then not leaving till 2, 3 in the morning. So we slid that back to 11 o'clock and didn't think we would lose any renters, and I don't think we did. The facility sells itself. The services that are provided for someone renting services or salt itself. So just thought I'd give you a little extra.
All right. I'll entertain a motion concerning the adoption of the proposed fee structure and rate changes. Trustee Harris?
I move to approve the change in fee structure for 2017 as presented.
Is there a second to that motion? Trustee Green.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The fee structure has been changed. Next item is number 10, discussion of Village of Alloway Neighborhood Service Cadet Program. Mark submitted a memo to the board concerning some contemplated changes. Mark, maybe you just introduce it quickly for the benefit of the public.
The debt program was initiated in June 2011. We've had probably, I think, 45 cadets volunteer at that time. They are all police cadets going through NWPC Police Academy. So when they come here, they were actually, when they did 72 hours of volunteer time, they would get college credit for a semester credit, 3 credits for the class. The program worked out pretty good. The thing that's happened recently is because of the negativity of the police force departments around the United States and media, that academy's not as getting as many cadets or NWTC as they used to, so I don't get as many volunteers. Right now I'm down to one, and I really can't. She's getting ready to graduate, so she won't be here anymore herself. Not getting volunteers like we did, and from the quality of the of cadets kind of went down a little bit when it first started. So what I was looking at, we're working at with Deputy Lott now. I mean, I'm sorry, And I'm working on the manual. I'm working on revamping the program, probably getting the police officers a little bit more involved with them. I think Captain Sandberg has looked at this. He's on board with it. He wants to look at the manual once we finish updating the manual. What we're going to do with the manual is take away some of the responsibilities for the cadets and add different responsibilities. Again, a little bit more of them being up under control of police officers on duty at night, because I'm not here all the time, so I can't watch them all the time. So if they did come in on the second shift or third shift, it would only be for 2 hours to 4 hours a week. We're trying to limit it down to just make it 2 to 4 hours a week, which would give them 18 weeks to work for us. And after they graduate or after they put their 18 hours in, they would no longer be with us anymore. Because they would have their 72 hours credits, and they could move on to whatever they need to do. This would also allow, they come in and work, they can go out and write the parking citations at night if they need to or really need to do. Building checks would be something that would be added on there, and the housing checks, if they go on vacation and checking the houses, they can come in and take that over to the police officers. That way they can go out and the police, you know, more important stuff they've got to do other than, let's say it's not important checking houses, but they've got other things they can do that the cadets could take over, just minor stuff like that, where they could check the houses and the businesses and write the overnight parking citations, and then free up the police officers for other things. They did look at asking us possibly making this an intern program, where they'd be paying interns. We would limit the cadets down to 4 cadets, again, only 4 hours a week maximum. They would be with 1 8-hour shift. We require we do an 8-hour shift, which would be with a ride along with a police officer. So that would be the only long shift they would actually work riding with a police officer. The rest of the week, they would be working 2 to 4 hours a week for the 18 weeks, so they got their 72 hours. One reason we look at this is a little bit more control over the cadets, because right now, a volunteer, they just come in when they want to, or they don't have to come in at all. And that was starting to be a problem, especially on night shifts. This would be able to write a schedule for them that they would have to come in certain hours or know when they would be here. Police officers would know when they would be here, so they could set their schedule up according to the cadets come in to help them out. And again, I would be more in charge with them as far as I could set up a schedule, the time, and I know when they would be here, and they would have to be here, so I'd be just wondering if they're going to show up or not on the volunteers' basis. The number would be higher than before. If they work 4 hours each week, they would have an 18-week internship, and then they would be released at that time. They would have to be a be vetted a little bit more in depth, because they would be interned somebody, you know, not they wouldn't get a job here, but when they get out, they'd be more vetted as far as make sure they've got a lot better background checks on and things like that. They would be working for us as an intern. So, did have a cost on there for cadets. At the time, Angie looked at it, took everything down, Social Security, and then because of being interns, they still have to pay all that. And it cost $2,247.75 for 18 weeks for 4 cadets. So I just put this out together. Everything's not finished yet. I just want to get this out right now. We're still working on a lot of some of the finer stuff. Once we get the manual over, it has to go to the Third County, Pinal County Sheriff's Department for them to review it. Has to get their okay also. So I just want to have the board get your suggestions or ideas if you think about it.
Well, and I appreciate you putting this detailed memo together. Cadet program is a good program. You know, I think it. You know, I mean, we always want to enforce the codes, and, you know, we'd like our DEOs to be doing things other than writing, you know, some of these citations that the cadets write and focus on the bigger things. And, I mean, and paying them, I get that, you know, making them paid interns. I mean, at least that way they're a little more responsible. And that has been the problem, or at least part of the problem, is they show up when they want to show up and they leave when they want to leave, and there's no consistency in maybe paying them. You know, might create a little bit more stability in the program. I think when they're out there writing tickets and enforcing our code, which we want to, we get revenue from the tickets. So it's a win-win. We're enforcing our codes, and if people aren't paying attention, then they get a citation. Dennis, do you see any issue switching them from unpaid to paid interns?
No.
Okay. Well, it's not an action item anyway, just for discussion. So any board comment or discussion? Trustee Harris?
First off, I think the idea is great. I like how you laid it out. Thank you, Mark. Surprise, I'm going to ask a money question. Would we be funding this through the sheriff's office or through the village budget? I'm not sure if I saw that, if it would be set anywhere.
It would be ours.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Trustee Rafter.
From listening, and I like the idea as well. It sounds, if we can't get more than one today, are we saying because we're going to pay them that that's how we'll get 4? Are we not getting the people today because it's not a paid position?
No, I don't believe that's the situation. Again, it's they're not getting quality or as many as they get right now.
Right.
Because of the way things are going on, it's the negativity of trying to be a police officer.
So do we think we'll be able to get 4? Or?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I work pretty well with John Landry over there. He's one of the instructors. He's also a Alloway resident. They've got some good ones over there. It's just getting the point of them to want to volunteer to do stuff anymore. And they don't have to get the classes again. It's gotten kind of small. When I first started there, I mean, I went over there. I originally had 5. I had like 40 people come in and apply, you know, when it first started. And now it's just seemed to, for some reason, and that's what we're taking this, is the negativity about being a police officer. It's kind of driving them away, but they just don't have the people like they used to. And I think maybe if we got this, then again, we'd be vetted a little bit better and picking them, trying to get the best of the best out of the academy and working with the academy instructors. Let us know who's good.
Well, and for students who are aspiring to be police officers, I think an internship program is great. I think it's great, quite honestly, to have them under the supervision of the sheriffs, you know, because you're their mentors, right? And so it doesn't make sense, even during the day, even though you're administering the program, for them to work with the sheriffs.
Right. That's the other reason they are interns. They would be more working with sheriff's department, have a little bit, they would even have more control over them.
Yeah,
we'd get some volunteers.
I think that would be good from an educational perspective. and just from really getting to understand the law profession. I think it'd be great for them to work more under the control of the sheriffs.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Trustee Dennis.
There's a line here that says the cadets will be required to work bicycle patrol during the warmer summer season and assigned to patrol Fox Rivers and East River Trails. Do we provide the bicycles, or is that a Brown County Share thing? Is that something that we have figured in?
I have four bicycles already.
Are they legally ours?
They are. They were actually, we had the bicycles were given to us and the helmets. That was when I first started.
I just saw it. I thought, I meant a picture of the Green Bay cops driving, Brian brought on their bikes and thought, I don't know if they had any specialized equipment on them or not, or if they're just bikes.
They're just bikes.
Okay.
And actually, people love seeing the cadets on the trail. We have more comments, I think, about them on the trail that were very positive.
Yeah, some, a lot of times it's just the presence. You know. We should get horses. Put them
I was
up,
just horses. Going to say that.
Any other discussion or comments concerning this? Otherwise, I suggest maybe when the handbook's done and been reviewed, maybe we bring it back, and then we can probably approve the handbook and then issue or pass a motion as an action item that we'll switch them to paid interns. So that seems to probably be a good course for that. Any other comments? All right, then we'll move on to recodification update, item number 11. Brad.
I'm going to give Brad a break on this one. This is kind of like reporting on making sausage. The good news is that we're here now to submit what they call the editorial and legal analysis back to General Code. And what we received initially was a manuscript where redid our municipal code, and that's, I want to say, a 9 to an 11-inch document, very, very thick. And then you got a separate document from them, which is an analysis of the code, the manuscript that they prepared for us. Then what we did is each department was assigned chapters from the code that were relevant to what their jurisdiction was. So if we used Chris, for example, he got all the park and recreation stuff to review, redline, and then submit, review again. And now this week we're going to be sending all of this back to them because it's all the chapters have been reviewed by department heads. Everyone at this table has been involved, and then we would have collective meetings to review certain ordinances. Debbie had a ton of ordinances, chapters that were, fell under the village clerk's office. We'll send that in. I don't know how they do it, because attached to our analysis, we had a number of people who just basically redid entire chapters, recodified. And it hadn't been looked at for a long time. I don't know the last time the village ever did a recodification. I can't tell. It might have been before clearance.
It's been a long time. There's a lot of the codes.
I wanted to see if he was
a lot of the codes.
When I came here, the ordinance book was this big and that thick.
Okay, so there's been a couple. There's been about two new laws since clearance. So we did all, it's the kind of work that people are, they don't get real excited about. It's very tedious, but it's now been done. I've kind of taken it through a final rinse, putting it all together for submittal, and then they're going to have a relatively long period of time to come back with, quote, a final rough draft of the code. So we'll get, one other shot at it. In my experience, I've done this in three other communities. And usually what happens is you'll get your new code in place, and then it's a living, breathing document, and then you'll discover that it needs more changes and maybe some things that you didn't see. But it is so important at least to have an updated code for the community.
And I applaud all the staff who worked on that. I've had my opportunities and time spent reviewing codes, and it is pretty dry and tedious work. But and I'm glad we're actually finally doing that, because I mean, I remember you look in the ordinance book. I mean, you can tell it was typewritten. You know, I mean, this stuff looked like it was typewritten many years ago.
There's stuff on dot matrix printers.
Yeah, there. Yeah. So it'll be nice and pretty, and comprehensive, and actually work together, because I think there's some, I'm sure you've seen them, there's some parts you read one section, they read a different section, they don't quite say the exact same thing. So it's good we're going through the process. Any comments or questions concerning the recodification? Hearing none. The next item, I'll make the motion to adjourn, seconded by Trustee Green. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We stand adjourned.